Saman went over and had a few words with Yule, who jumped up, fetched the rifle, grabbed it by the barrel, and after a few running steps, gave it a mighty heave. Spinning end over end, it flew about halfway across the river, then stabbed into the current and disappeared. About a minute later, two mobs full of moshed constables showed up and piled out of their wailing and flashing vehicles. Except for Fra Osa and the sewer who were sewing me together, all of the Ringing Veil of Out sat on the ground, feet tucked under them, and looked serene. The constables mostly gaped at them. How many thousands of spielies have been produced about the fictional exploits of these Fras and sewers? The cops couldn't begin to think of them as suspects. They saw them more as tourist attractions, zoo animals, movie stars. What's more, these Fras and sewers knew as much and knew how to exploit it. They showed us the meaning of posture and pretended to meditate. The cops ate it up. The boss cop had a long and, at first, tense conversation with Yule and Fra Osa. The sewer with the needle kept running that string through my flesh, and I gritted my teeth so hard I could hear them creaking. Finally, she tied it off and walked away without a word, without even a look. I had an upside. I might have warm feelings for these people because they helped me and because I had seen way too many spielies about them before I'd been collected. The Veilers, however, had not been evoked because they were nice guys. Cord came over and stood with her hands in her pockets, taking inventory of my bandages.
"See what a small percentage of my body they actually cover," I pointed out.
She was having none of it.
"Our plan didn't work out so well," I offered.
She looked off to the side and sniffled, the last emotional aftershock of a long day.
"Not your fault. How could we have known?
I'm sorry to have put you through this. I don't understand how things could have gone so wrong."
She looked at me acutely and saw nothing, I guess, except for a stupid look on my face.
"You don't have any idea what's going on, do you?"
"I guess not. Just that the military has been moving toward the pole."
A memory popped into my head, and a magister on the ship made some weird comment about the Warden of Heaven being cast out in wrath. Even as I was saying this, an old rattletrap coach was pulling in off the road. At its controls was Magister Sark. It was one of those freakish coincidences that made some people believe in spirits and psychic phenomena. I explained it away by supposing that my unconscious mind had seen the coach out of the corner of my eye a few moments before I'd consciously recognized him.
"You still with me?" Cord asked.
"Yeah. Hey, what about Jessery? Is he okay?"
"We think so. We'll get you caught up."
We looked over at Yule, who had somehow managed to get the police captain laughing. Something had been decided between them. The official part of the conversation was over. The captain came over and made a few appreciative remarks about how banged up I was and what a tough guy I must be, then asked if I wanted to pursue it, to press charges. Absolutely lying through my teeth, I said no. By doing so, I apparently closed a deal. The particulars were never explained to me, but the gist of it was that all of us were free to go. The leaders of that mob would get off free, except for injuries and insults already suffered. And these constables would dodge a mountain of paperwork. Paperwork that would have been 10 times as bad as what they were used to, simply because many of those concerned were avowed and hence of tricky legal status. Magister Sark had not been idle during all of these other goings-on. The coach belonged to his Kelks and Masht. It was painted all over with triangle iconography. It was large enough to transport all of the Veilers. Some other member of his Kelks had volunteered to drive them south to a bigger city, less chaotic than Masht at the moment, whence they could arrange transport to Tredegar. This driver, he explained, was on his way, but because of the difficult conditions in town, we might have to wait for a little while. The Magister glanced at me as he was explaining these things, and for some reason I felt a thrill of resentment. I did not like being indebted to him, and did not relish the prospect of having to sit gratefully through another sales pitch for his faith while we waited for the driver to show up. But it seemed he was more interested in checking my status than starting a conversation. And as soon as he stopped looking my way, I felt ashamed of the way I had reacted. Was there really that much of a difference between the Kelks' notion of having one's story related to the magistrate and the Veilers' concept of emergence? They seemed to produce very similar behavior. I owed my life to the fact that Sark and Ossa had been of one mind earlier today in Masht. I was on my feet by now. I limped over to him, held up my hand, and thanked him. He shook my hand firmly and said nothing.
"The condemned man had a good yarn to spin for the magistrate today," I said.
I guess I was trying to humor him. His face darkened.
"But he could not tell it without speaking too of the ones who behaved evilly. Yes, it is the case that, thanks to the spirit of the innocent, some good was achieved. But I can scarcely believe that the magistrate's ultimate judgment of this world was much shifted, either way, by what he heard from the condemned man today."